Hello, welcome to this edition of the Bearcats Blogcast. My name is Scott. Three-man pod today, joined by Chris Baines and Matt Oper. How's it going today, Chris?
Not great. How are you guys?
I'm fantastic.
Oh, so you didn't see the game last Saturday?
I did.
Oh.
But still. That was almost a week ago, so I'm better. Just in time, right?
Yeah. Just in time to face, you know, one of two ranked teams that UC will be facing in the next 2 weeks. So that'd be great.
Yeah, just jumping right in as a gigantic home underdog for, I believe, like the first time in, I forget how long it has been now. It's like a decade since UC has been this big of a home underdog. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, I have not done any research on that, but it's got to be somewhere way back in the infancy of the Brian Kelly era, probably against West Virginia.
Yeah, I was either thinking that or the Rutgers game, potentially. Or, I don't know, something in like the Rick Minter era. Got to be one of those. So jumping right ahead to UCF, spending all of 30 seconds talking about Marshall.
No, I mean, there are some points to make about the Marshall game. Like, what's happened with the defense? Like, they were pretty good for two games, and...
Yeah.
Not so much of late. So, any theories?
Very bad. You can kind of, I think is you can almost write off the Navy game just because it's Navy. They run for a gazillion yards on everybody. They give everybody fits. UC did not maintain outside contain with their cornerbacks. They got blown off the ball by Navy's gigantic wide receivers. You're not going to see that every week. Marshall runs a much more traditional offense, and UC could not get sacks for the life of them. Looking at their offensive linemen, I don't think they have a senior among the group. I think there's like one or two redshirt freshmen, sophomores. Not an especially crazy talented group of offensive linemen, and you know UC couldn't really do much defensively. Didn't record a sack for the first time in weeks. Couldn't get penetration in the backfield. Quarterback had a million years to throw. Really, they just got flat-out manhandled by a very traditional offense, one that UC's had success with this season and one that UC's going to see quite a bit throughout the rest of the season, and it's super, super concerning.
Yeah, I think the big problem with the defense, it's not really like any type of astute analysis, is how poor they've been on third downs. Navy converted a million third downs against Cincinnati, like even with the option. And while Marshall ended up 7 of 18, they did hit a couple of fourth downs. And really, like, when UC needed a stop, they just could not get one for another week in a row. Like, in this performance, was like generally like not good, especially since they could not get off the field in the first half.
Like, right.
Marshall ended up with the ball for 40 minutes for the game, which is insane. Like, that doesn't tell the whole story, since it's like it was kind of even out the second half. But just not being able to get off the field on third down and like letting Marshall keep putting together like double-digit play drives, like, it was a gigantic backbreaker. And like, we can't also discount like the short field that Marshall seemed to have quite a bit.
Yeah, and the thing with the third down conversions is I think four of those were gifted to the third
and third
by the Bearcats with personal foul penalties or just other penalties that resulted in a first down. That's, you know, I am firmly in the camp of penalties don't matter. They're irrelevant. They don't really have any impact over winning or losing on the course of a season. That being said, timing does matter. And ideally, you would rather have a penalty on first or second down than third down. Just for the drive, the ability of penalties to keep drives alive that you otherwise killed off. Yeah, I think that was a bigger problem for UC than anything else. And the continuing special teams being special. Yeah, they're special.
Yeah, why is it that UC struggled to find a place kicker who can consistently kick field goals and extra points over the course of an entire season? And they haven't been able to find that one for, God, I don't know. Who was before Tony Miliano? Like, why? What is the issue with special teams? Like, I think coverage is fine. Punting is fine. Kickoff, punt returns, and place kicking has just been dog shit the last few years. I mean, maybe it just takes time with the new staff, but it seems like same old, back to the Tuberville era.
The punt returns just haven't been good. They weren't good in the Brian Kelly. Not Brian Kelly, but the Butch Jones era. Like, I don't know. Like, this has been a problem for a decade. They haven't had a kick return touchdown since Marty Gilliard. Like, that part is kind of weird.
I know it feels like it's been since Marty, but Ralph David Abernathy had a couple.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think his last one was a Liberty Bowl, right?
That's the last one I remember.
Yeah, that had to be it. But see, I guess.
But I mean, to your point, Scott. On a general note, it's been awful. Go ahead.
I guess it would be punt returns. They haven't had one since Gilliard, right? I don't think anybody broke one since.
I believe that is correct.
Okay, I stand corrected in one sense. But yeah, even like Jake Rogers, when he was the kicker, I think he was the kicker before Miliano. His senior year, he struggled. And then Miliano had a couple of good years. Then he lost it. And now Paisley is kind of struggling. So I really don't know what happened with the kickers. Do you have any theories on this, Matt?
Special teams in general is more of a... Like, you have to recruit a good kicker. That's one thing. And then you have to hope that over the course of 4 years, your kicker doesn't go into some sort of weird headspace where they can no longer kick the football. Good luck with that part. There's really nothing you can do. You just have to hope you pick the non-crazy kicker. The rest of it, like, special teams is it's a cultural thing, right? Like, for years, the best special teams units were Virginia Tech because that was such a fundamentally integral part of their ethos that it just kind of it bled into the rest of the program. Like, they were a defensive special teams program. In more recent times, Urban Meyer has generally had outstanding special teams units because he got his start as a special teams coach. That was where he made his bones as a young coach coming up in the ranks. And he continued to work with those groups so much so that also becomes a cultural thing. Like, special teams are a huge part of the program at Ohio State because Urban Meyer makes it so. But, you know, the first couple of years when Meyer comes to a new school, the special teams are not always automatically special. And the biggest question I have is whether or not Fickell is going to be able to instill that same ethos into this program because it is desperately, desperately needed at this point. I mean, like, it's just... UC is ranked in the 90s again for special teams. I don't see any way where they don't finish the year ranked in the 90s again in special teams. It just seems there's really no hope for this year.
Yeah, and like I'm sure like Paisley's a nice guy, but this is like 2 years in a row. Like he's just been completely inconsistent. Like his 26 yarder, like his miss wasn't the game. It was like more symbiotic of the struggles of the first half. Like missing a 26 yarder is kind of inexcusable, and he's just not reliable. Like kind of period. I mean, he wasn't last year either. And whatever happened with Andrew Dance, I guess it's injuries, and I guess that's had a big impact on his performance this year. Because that's just, he was terrible in the Austin Peay game. So I really don't know what's happening with Pierce.
Well, that's the thing is, it's like, you know, Miliano, it seemed like Miliano had some hope, you know, coming into his junior, senior year, but he fell off a cliff. Gantz looked good in his first season at UC, and then he fell off a cliff. Then you turn to Paisley, and he's looked awful. It's like this, like, cloud of awful kicking play is just hanging over that position, no matter who gets plugged in there. And, I mean, ultimately it just comes down to coaching, I would assume, to kind of fix that. I just don't know how you break that position of those bad habits.
Yeah, there really isn't. There's not a lot you could do, right? Because so much of kicking it's a mental thing, right? It's right. Like a golf swing. You know, you have it and then you don't. And you go looking for it for 3-4 years and then maybe you find it again for a couple of months and have a good summer. And then it goes off into the wilderness again to find itself, to be centered. And then maybe you find it again when you're 45 and you have a good couple of years. And then it goes off and wanders away again. That's kind of like kicking. It's just, you have it and then you don't, and then you don't know why you don't have it anymore.
Right, and I guess my concern is that, you know, you got a seemingly a solid kicker joining the team in a little while, I guess he's gray-shirted now, Cole Smith. I mean, do you plug him in right away, and is he going to be the guy going forward? Is he going to run into these issues where he just simply just can't, like to your point, Matt, they just don't have it for stretches of time, and it just goes away, and then hopefully you hope it comes back at some point. Like, that's my concern going forward is, I mean, can this systemic issue at the position be fixed by just bringing in a new guy, or is it something that it comes down to just coaching?
I think the only thing you can do is bring in competition just see what happens. And if you bring in a couple of the right guys, quote unquote, that can solve the problem. Because, you know, not to go full capitalist, but competition does make everybody better because you have to work harder. Right. I mean, that's really all you can do. And you recruit the guys and then you hope, which is why special teams are maddening to everyone.
Right.
Kicking especially, because it kind of doesn't matter who wins the job in practice because you have such a small sample of, like, actual in-game kicks. And, like, just missing one or two, like, deflates confidence in the kicker, like, in himself and with the coaching staff. Like, Paisley, really, he's only missed 3 kicks this year. But he's attempted 6, so it seems like he's missed every single kick he's attempted.
Yeah, and when you're a team who plays marginal football, as this team does, because, as we'll get into, there's, you know, not a lot of hope on offense. Things on the margin matter a lot more for a team like this. So if your kicker is hitting 50% of his kicks for the year and you have no offense to speak of, that's a little more problematic than if you're putting up 50 points a game.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a very good point. I guess we can kind of spin this into the offense now. After, like, a lot of enthusiasm about, like, Hayden Moore's performance, like, over the last 6 quarters, yeah, kind of came down to earth pretty hard against Marshall. Like, I guess he looks decent the second half, but, like, a turnover right off the bat, right after Marshall turned the ball over on their opening drive, he's 22 of 45, which is not really great. Did throw for 211 yards and a touchdown. It's just like another like wildly inconsistent game where it seemed like they just couldn't connect anything until like Marshall kind of relaxed on defense. Like, what, is the issue him or is it the play calling?
It's Hayden Moore, to be blunt. I mean, what I saw from the play calling on Saturday was fairly good calls to get receivers open and Hayden Moore airmailing the ball more often than not. Like, I don't think we saw many of the drops on Saturday like we saw that was systemic with the offense earlier in the season. I think the receivers are coming around in that regard. And the play calling is getting those receivers open, but then Hayden Moore's just throwing it 5 yards over their heads.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Like, it's Hayden Moore is the biggest problem with this offense right now because, you know, usually teams break down, like offenses break down into they're efficient or they're explosive. The best offenses are both. Right now, UC is neither. And I think Hayden Moore is the biggest reason for that because he is so inconsistent down to down that there can be no consistency for the rest of the offense because no one knows what to expect anytime he drops back, right? He's completing a little bit over 52% of his passes. He's averaging 5 yards an attempt. 5 yards an attempt would have been great in 1945. 5 yards an attempt now is a backbreaker because especially if you're only completing 50% of your passes. Because you're not going anywhere. You're not generating any explosive plays, right? And at the rate that he's completing, with the amount of sacks that he's giving up, it's not sustainable. You know, he had essentially six good quarters in a row in the second half of the Miami game and then pretty much all of the Navy game outside of a couple drives. And then he just was not present against Marshall. Like, he was just not there. And Fickell made some comments about how the plan was to get Ross Trail some action in the Marshall game, but they didn't want to do it. They didn't want to just throw him in there in an adverse situation because they didn't want him to lose confidence or whatever.
And thank God for that, by the way. Holy shit. I love that comment. Go on.
So it's clear that Hayden Moore is playing for his job, and I think everybody knows it, because they can't have another 8 games like this, I'm assuming a bowl game, I know, I'm an optimist, or they can't have another 7 games like this, because it's just, you're not doing anything, right? If you're not trying to get to a bowl, if you're not trying to win this year, then why are you playing this guy who's not going to have a future with this program next year? Because next year, we know exactly what he is. He is a guy who averages 5 to 6 yards an attempt over the last 2 years, right? He's not efficient. He's not accurate. He makes terrible decisions. He locks on to his primary receiver and never, ever, ever goes to the secondary. Like those are things that you can't live with as an offense. So, you know, is it Ross Trail time? You got to think that it's coming. Whether or not it comes in the next 2 weeks, in the two biggest games of the year, is. But that raises a host of different questions. But it's not working with Hayden Moore, and they can't keep, you know, running this guy out there because. And it's, at some point, this becomes a year zero, and you're playing for the future. And, I mean, it is what it is. Hayden Moore is not part of the future.
I kind of think that's the big reason why the coaching staff hasn't made a switch at quarterback yet. It's because they're still trying to play for a bowl game, still trying to play for the division. So you're still only one game out. You play your two toughest opponents. Your two biggest hurdles to winning the division. I just don't think they want to throw Trail in that type of situation where he's starting against your two toughest opponents remaining. I think if UC gets swept, which like most people think they will, I kind of think then like SMU is like where you look at Trail starting.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like from Fickell's comments on Tuesday, Trail was essentially out of football action up until up until the Navy game. And I totally understand that position there where their hands are tied behind their back because, I mean, you're not going to throw a Ross Trail in with a couple of days of practice before a game. You're not going to throw a Ross Trail in when you're down, you know, 30-10 or something like that with a defense to quote Fickell, pinning their ears back, which totally makes sense. I mean, that's something we definitely bitched about during the Tuberville era with the musical chairs of Gunnar Kiel and Ross Trail and Hayden Moore last season. I fully believe that Hayden Moore is beating out Jake Sopko in practice. And for a coaching staff, I mean, what are you going to do? You're going to go with a junior who at least looks better in practice, or you're going to go for the redshirt freshman who's still coming into his own at the college level. I think now that Trail is, it sounds like he's back. I mean, I don't know if he's 80%, 90%, 100% health-wise. It sounds like he's, for the most part, back. But to your point, Scott, I don't know if it makes sense to throw him into games where UC's probably going to lose either way, and you basically let him kind of run the offense in practice, obviously you let Hayden Moore run the offense in practice, because I would let him start UCF and USF knowing that you're going to lose the game, and then prepare him for SMU to make a run at the end of the season to break into the bowl game. That's what I would do. I think that makes most sense. I think if Trail was fully healthy about 2 weeks before the Navy game, you start him against Marshall and just roll the dice going forward. But knowing that he hasn't been healthy for basically a month and a half, I can understand why the staff have rolled out Hayden Moore as often as they have. I mean, just listening to their comments, I mean, it just sounds like they would have probably turned to Trail had he not been injured for most of the season so far. But they just had no choice.
See, but I disagree with the premise that if you think that these two games coming up are lost causes, that you don't play Ross Trail. Like, he plays quarterback. He has to be able to manufacture his own confidence. And he's going to get better by playing against better teams. And it's not like this offense is last year's group where there is no plan. Like, there is no overarching idea. Like, the play calls are not the issue with this offense. It's the execution. So I don't buy into the notion that, you know, playing him in two games where you expect to lose is going to be somehow detrimental to his confidence or is going to wreck him for the rest of the year. Like, if we expect him to be the quarterback for the rest of his tenure here at Cincinnati, he has to be able to show up and show out in these kind of games. Because ideally, you're going to play in a lot of games like this. Big games with high stakes against very good teams where your performance matters and you have to be able to find it within yourself to overcome, you know, the obstacles that you're going to come and find in the game. Like, I just want to see Ross Trail. I want to see what he can do in an offense that makes sense with decent weapons around him. Which this group is. Like, I like our running backs, I like our wide receivers, but the sum of the offense has been less than the parts, if that makes sense. So I want to see what he can do. You know, we know what Hayden Moore is going to do, and it's not good enough. And maybe Ross Trail isn't good enough either, but we're not going to know if we, you know, apply kid gloves to him and treat him like he's a delicate little egg. You know, we have to find out what he's made of. And the only way you do that is playing against good teams. And these 2 weeks coming up are the biggest opportunity he's going to have to kind of prove himself on that stage.
Yeah, I mean, my only concern with starting Ross Trail this week is if he's not 100% healthy. I mean, I don't – South Florida –
That's a very good point.
I mean, Central Florida ranks fifth in the AAC in sacks. South Florida ranks third. I mean, these are – granted – South Florida and Central Florida make their name off of offense, so they're basically scoring enough points where their defense can pin their ears back and rack up the sacks, I mean, pretty much whenever they want to. Overall, Central Florida is leading the conference in points per game. They've got a solid defense this year. South Florida is third. I mean, these are good defenses that UC's facing this week. It would kill me if Ross Trail gets thrown out there and his arm's still a little bit on the mend, and then he takes a big hit in the backfield behind a really awful offensive line and is locked for the season, and then we have to turn to Hayden Moore. Nope. Basically like we had to do in the first few games of the season. That's my only reservation about starting Trail this week. But again, we have no idea how healthy he is.
Or really how well he's doing in practice. If like there's just gonna coming out and saying they're sticking with Moore. I will admit that part of the reason I not gung-ho for Trail starting next week is because I remember what he did against USF last year. And I don't think he played after the USF game last year.
That's a fair point. But here's my take on that. So Luke Fickell waited forever to name a starting quarterback. And we now know that Ross Trail was out for basically half of camp. So I'm reading between the lines, and I know that's a dangerous thing to do. But part of me really thinks that they were hoping that he would get healthy in time for them to name him the start rather than Hayden Moore. And because it didn't happen, Hayden has been the guy. And, you know, I think that might have something to do with Hayden's struggles with confidence in the last, five games. Is he knows that he's not the choice. And that he is playing with a short leash. And that as soon as Trail is healthy, he's probably coming for his job. That could be part of it. That's not a bad read of the situation.
Yeah, it's always dangerous to try to read between the lines, especially when you're dealing with college coaches who say one thing and do another. But listening to Fickell in this week's press conference, kind of understanding that this is a pragmatic man who, for all intents and purposes, he's putting the right personnel on the field when he has to. And he understands the urgency to win, and he obviously has a desire to win. I kind of agree with that sentiment that knowing the information that we have now that Trail has been hurt for the last month and a half, all else being equal, I think he would rather start Trail if he could have for the Austin Peay game and ride him throughout the end of the year. But he had to go with Hayden Moore just because he had nothing else to do.
I think that's kind of fair. But I don't think even if Trail was healthy, I don't think he would have started the Marshall game, though. Just because of how well Moore had played the last, six quarters, as we mentioned. But I think there's a pretty good chance if UC gets blown out like they did last week, that Trail starts against South Florida. Like, at 2-4, you'd have to really turn your season around at that point if you're going to make a bowl game. I don't think you can wait to 2-5. I've changed my mind on my opinion. Because, at 2-5, your season is, over. At 2-4, you still have a chance to go 8-4 and make a bowl game. So it has to be, the ultimate team goal, besides winning the division.
Yeah, but, so what Fickell said in the press conference is interesting because it's basically saying to everyone what Hayden Moore, it kind of externalizes everything that Hayden Moore has been internalizing, because Hayden has to know that he is not the first choice of the staff. He knows he is not the guy going forward. And it doesn't help when your coach goes into a press conference and tells everybody that, yeah, we got this other quarterback, we really want him to play, but because we were getting our ass beat so bad, we didn't think it was appropriate to put him in there.
Right.
That doesn't exactly inspire confidence for Hayden Moore.
No, that speaks volumes. That speaks volumes. And because, let's go on the other side of the coin. If Hayden Moore is the guy and Fickell has extreme confidence in him, you don't ever make that statement at all. But by saying that, I mean, Fickell's not dumb. I mean, he's gonna say what he means, I would think, in a press conference, especially when he's probably been internalizing that for weeks. You gotta figure if he really has confidence in Hayden Moore, he doesn't say that to the press. You would hope.
I think even bigger than Moore, it's like systemic of the offense. Because you have to address the offense at some point. And the easiest change to make on offense is changing your quarterback.
Yeah, because, well, there are... I mean, we might as well get into a broader view of this team after 5 weeks, right? So, you don't have... Let's just come around and say it. You don't have an offensive line to speak of. Now, there are reasons for that, which we'll get into in a little bit. But because you don't have an offensive line, you're not going to be able to overwhelm people at the point of attack. So you have to scheme around that. And for the most part, what UC has been doing on offense is designed to do that. All the screen passes, all the short passes, the quick three-step drops, the running back, you know, the smoke draws, all the different run looks that they have, those are plays that you run not because you have an overwhelming advantage at the point of attack, but because you know you're going to get beat there and you have to work around it, right? And those plays can work, but they require a high degree of execution, especially in the passing game. And there has not been a high degree of execution in the passing game, right? So, I mean, through five games, what grade would you give the quarterback room, a.k.a. Hayden Moore, since he's the only one who's playing?
C-.
Oh, that's actually the grade I would give him, too. I'd give him a C-.
D.
See, I would go C-, because I think some of the things, we agree play calling isn't a gigantic issue, but I don't like the way they called the first half of the Marshall game. The way they called it the second half, where they mixed up the run and the pass more, seemed like they gave the whole offense as a whole like a boost, and like Moore seemed to make most of his plays in the second half. But I don't think the offense is all on him. But I don't think he's also played well either.
I mean, it's not all on him, but a lot of it is. Especially when you're dealing with an offense that would like to pass the ball effectively most of the time. The problem is when you're calling play calls that call for Hayden Moore to pass the ball, it's a crapshoot of what the hell ever you're going to get. I mean, he might complete the pass, he might dig it into the ground, he might throw an interception. Mike Denbrock has no clue what he's going to do. But he's got to call the offense the way he wants to call the offense.
And that is the bigger issue, is just the rife inconsistency with Hayden Moore. I mean, like, his ball placement's all over the place. You have no idea if you're getting a fastball or a changeup. You know, like, these plays are designed so that you get the ball to your guys in space so that they can make a play. Too often, the play is making the catch because the ball is, it's 3 yards behind you. It's 4 feet too high. You know, it's all it's everywhere but where it needs to be. And that's all on Hayden Moore. Like, I want to give him credit. I mean, he had six very good quarters in a row. Those were his best games since he beat Miami as a freshman. But it's been surrounded by a lot of mediocrity. That's why I give him a D.
I don't think he's really been helped out by his receivers too much either. Like, if we just like move to the receivers next, I would give the receivers a C as well. It's like Devin Gray had like one big play, and like it seemed like nobody else really did anything besides like when Halls came in like the fourth quarter. Which I kind of thought was interesting. They like really leaned on Halls a lot on special teams, and he had a big part in the receiving game. Like, of course, Lewis got hurt, and that's why he had a big part to play. But like overall, like the receivers have really been inconsistent as well. And when you have an inconsistent quarterback and your receivers can't bail them out, that really hurts the offense as well. Like, I just don't think they've been impressive at all.
Well, I mean, that's the thing is at the beginning of the year, I would say on any given passing play, it was 50-50 receiver quarterback responsibility of whether or not a pass was actually going to be completed. Just because the receivers are dropping a ton of passes and Hayden Moore was throwing them all over the place. But over since basically the Navy game, the receivers have been catching the ball pretty consistently. So the responsibility of any missed completion is really shifting over to Hayden Moore because he's still throwing it errantly on any given pass. I mean, it might hit the receiver in the hands in stride or it might go 4 feet behind him. He's still wildly inconsistent with his passes.
Yeah, like the receivers haven't been good. It just is what it is. But they're not, you know, neither the receivers nor Hayden Moore are helping each other. Right. And there's no continuity at all, which is a shocking thing to say when you have the guy who's been the presumptive starter, who's worked with these guys all summer long, all offseason. And there's still this much confusion and randomness in this offense. That's not good. So let's move on to the running backs. What do you give this group, which has been...
I have one more thing to say about the receivers real quick.
All right.
Let's do this, and then we'll grade the receivers. That work?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just think the overall lack of big plays by pretty much everybody we expected to get better or pick up where they left off from last year, like, really been kind of crazy. Like, Lewis has been, I guess, decent. But, like, Devin Gray, like, his targets to catches is incredibly low. Like, 31 targets, only 14 catches. Like, he hasn't been, like, breaking out like we thought. Like, Rollins, like, came on pretty well at the end of last year, and he hasn't done, like, anything this year. Same with Geddes. Like, he had, like, one big game. He hasn't really done much. Like, I know, like, some of it's on Moore, but it just seems like they haven't broken out the way, like, you would expect them to, given, like, what you have with your offense. If you're going to have big explosive plays, you have to get them from your receivers as well.
I think that's fair. I just think that... I think the receivers played a big part of the blame in lack of big plays earlier in the season because, hell, they were dropping a bunch of passes, but they are not dropping nearly as many passes as they have been. I mean, usually when a ball is in their vicinity on deep plays, they're hauling it in. At least they have the last 2 weeks. So they're trending upward. They're getting better. The problem I have is
big plays against Marshall. They had one big play against Marshall, which was really my overall point.
Right. I don't know if it's. I think, or if we're talking about the season on the whole, I think the receivers are trending upward. I think Hayden Moore is stagnant at his whatever C minus rating or D rating or however you want to grade him. So that's kind of my, if we're looking, you know, 6 weeks forward from now, I can see the receivers coming into their own and getting those big plays. I don't see Hayden Moore connecting on those big plays, if that makes any sense.
What was the last time that Hayden Moore threw a good deep ball that was dropped by a receiver?
Miami?
Correct. And there's only been one. Most of the time, if you see an open receiver down the field, the ball is either over or underthrown. Not by a lot, not by like 10 yards, but by like it's a foot too far, 3 feet too far, or, you know, a yard too shallow. Like, that's the issue. Like, you got to be accurate on your deep balls if you're going to generate big plays. Like, you can't do it all from the screen game. And I put that on Hayden more than I put it on the receivers. Can we move on to the running backs?
Yes.
Well, go ahead, Scott.
No, Matt, you want to talk about the running backs. You talk about the running backs, damn it.
All right. C+. I like Joe. I like Warren. Mike Boone has been hobbled. Like, they have to generate all their own big plays, which is the biggest problem with this offense. But, like, I love the talent of this group. They need to be more consistent. Obviously, you're relying on two freshmen. It's not never ideal. But I think eventually, like, this is going to become a good group. It's just a matter of when will the offensive line allow them to really shine.
Okay, so are you grading the running backs or are you grading the running game? Because those two are very different.
I give the running backs a C+. I give the running game a D.
Okay, so I would give the running backs like a B+. I would give the running game a C for exactly those reasons. Like, I think the talent, like, I love the talent at the running back position. I think they're doing what they can with the offensive line in front of them. I mean, they had 5.3 yards per carry on Saturday. I mean, in most circumstances, you're going to win games if you're running 5.3 yards per carry. But it's just the offensive line isn't always giving them those opportunities. So it's like, you know, they're forced into 1, 2, 3 yard gains. And then you see, you know, Michael Warren burst it out for a 49 yard gain or something like that. I mean, I think the talent's there. I think if the offensive line was better, you would see these running backs just running all over everything. So I would give the position itself like a B+.
I'm going to like split the difference. I'm going to give the backs a B-, then the running game also a D. Like, the running game has just been so inconsistent. But like we've seen like Dokes pretty much since, you know, he had like the one big play against Michigan. And like the past couple of weeks since, he's really been the man. He's put up some nice numbers. And like Warren showed something against Marshall after he had a really slow start. Like, just like their consistency. Like, obviously, most of them are young backs. Like, I think that's been the bigger issue. It's not like the big plays that they break off. It's like kind of the rest of the plays. They're still learning, like, on the job, pretty much. And, like, I don't know if it reflects on the running backs, but, like, the lack of, like bulk carries to one back, it seems like the coaching staff just really doesn't trust the running game, period.
With good reason. And the reason is this offensive line has not been good. Chris, what's your grade for the O-line?
I would say like a D. And I mean that's from talent and performance.
I'll go C-. Just to be nicer, I guess. It seems like the coaching staff has kind of found a way to scheme around some of these things. But, like, you really can't scheme around everything. Like, they've only given up 7 sacks, which seems kind of surprising.
Yeah, they've been very good in pass protection, but there's just... There's not a lot of talent there. I mean, I give it a D as well. And I compiled a list of every offensive line recruit since 2013 and where they are now. You ready? Corey Cunningham. He started the last 12 games, left tackle, pretty good player. He was in class 2013. Also in the class of 2013, Ben, who tragically lost his life 3 years ago. I think it was 2 weeks ago. 2014 class, Jamarius Bowen was supposed to be an offensive lineman, transferred to Indiana. He's now a contributor to their very, very good defense. Luke Callahan transferred after the 2015 season. Ryan Stout transferred after the 2016 season. Chris Ferguson has played 0 games. John Kurtz transferred after this last spring practice. Keith Miner, he's made 2 starts at guard. And that's the class of 2014. Going to 2015, Evan Mallory, 0 games, not on the roster. Tyler McGarr, 0 games. Delonte Murray transferred to Shepherd College in West Virginia. Reed Armaghost transferred out of the program. No idea where he is. Idarius Ray, 17 games, 8 starts. And then in the 2016 class, You have Zach, I'm going to butcher your name, Biznaski.
That was good.
Is that close? I don't know.
I liked it.
Thank you. Kendall Calhoun, five games. Jakari Robinson, redshirted. He's redshirting this year. Blake Yeager, two games. So that's a lot of transfers, and that's why we're starting three former walk-ons.
When you say the list like that, it really stands out.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it basically comes down to, warm bodies, yeah.
Well, it's not even, they have enough warm bodies because you can always get walk-ons. But they have just not brought through enough talent that has been able to contribute. And that 2014 class, which I was really excited about at the time, it did not pan out. it really did not pan out.
Yeah, like offensive line is one of those positions where if you just have a total whiff, that's really sets you back. Like, it doesn't matter if you're Alabama or Cincinnati. Like, it really kills. Then yet you're relying on the younger guys to come in, help you out, or you're relying on walk-ons. Like, the talent level kind of dips with your offensive line, which is really important to the offense, if you didn't know.
As we've seen. It goes back to the fact that, while it seems like Tuberville's staff targeted offensive linemen, he had an issue retaining them and replacing them when they transfer. It seems like he kind of relied on, that's a lot of attrition. I mean, in no way in hell is any program going to survive with that kind of attrition that Matt listed. But, if you're a competent staff, you figure out means to really replace those players. And I think the staff did to an extent, with Delonte Murray and Adarius Ray. But for the most part, they didn't. They never really stockpiled offensive linemen and talented offensive linemen to really overcome that attrition. Because, if you're a program, you know you're going to go through attrition, especially as coaches move around, players just don't pan out. But the Tuberville staff just never dealt with the attrition appropriately. And, that's why we're at the issue where we're at now.
Yeah, and the thing about what they, I get the strategy that they had in terms of supplementing your roster with JUCOs, especially on the offensive and defensive lines. That is, in and of itself, there's nothing inherently wrong with that strategy. But there is a downside. The downside is if you bring in these JUCOs to give you immediate playing time, immediate contributors, that's fine, but you have to recruit. You basically have to redouble your efforts so that you get high school players coming in behind those ranks so that when their 2 years are done, you have the next wave coming through. Right, so they recruited three JUCO offensive linemen in 2 years. They all play to varying degrees. And then the class that was supposed to replace those guys transferred en masse, right? I think Keith Miner is the only one left from that 2014 class. I listed six guys. There's one left. That's your replacement wave. When your replacement wave is a guy, it's not great. And it's going to be this way for the rest of the year. It just is what it is. There's no instant fix to this. And personally, I really like what they're doing in recruiting, but they got to start getting some big dudes in there because there's only two offensive linemen committed. They're going heavy on linebackers and defense and defensive line and skill position guys, but they have 18 spots filled. They need to get at least four more offensive linemen in the group.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. We've seen that they're targeting talent. They're targeting the skill positions. They've obviously done great at running back. Holy shit, they've done great at running back. But the problem is they haven't really gone after the guys to block for them up front. And I don't know. I'm not sure. Maybe Fickell's hoping for something coming down the pipeline with with the transfer market. Maybe he's going to target some JUCOs here. There's not a whole lot of spots left in this class, and we haven't seen that many offensive linemen, and we don't really know if there's anything coming down from a crystal ball standpoint. I don't know. I agree. That's what's kind of concerning, is that we're, what are we at, like 19 in this class so far, with maybe, you know, 5 to 10 spots to go, and I don't know what offensive lineman that might be leaning towards UC right now.
Yeah, it does seem like they're just going to go the JUCO route to fill up some of their line spots, as like you guys mentioned. Unless there's
so, anyway, yeah, I mean, that's the problem, is that it's basically an issue that's going to be sitting here for a little while now. And it's an issue that I don't see being fixed in recruiting until we actually see some commitments from offensive linemen. I think Fickell understands the issue. I would hope he understands the issue. We'll just have to hope that it actually gets fixed here with this cycle.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm not saying they're not going to get, like, it just has to be addressed.
I think it'll be addressed. Yes. Right.
All right. So let's move on to the defensive line. I got it as a B.
I think that's fair. I think that's fair. I'd say B.
I'd say B as well, which, like, but kind of like with like the, like, down from like a A to start the season, because like we've seen. Like, obviously, you can skip Navy. Like, the lack of pass rush has been kind of, like, worrisome, I would say. Like, UC only has 5 sacks this year and 9 hurries. And it seems like an awful lot of them came very early in the season. But, like, they still, like, play well. And, like, it's not like Marshall, like, ran the ball like crazy on them or anything. But it's like their performance hasn't been, like, elite. But I'm not sure how much of that has to do with the linebackers not being great either.
Well, the problem with the defensive line right now is their 2 best pass rushers are tackles, and that's never really a good spot. Like, tackles are supposed to supplement your pass rush, right? They're not supposed to be the pass rush. But it's like Copeland has had a phenomenal season early. And so has Cortez Broughton. I mean, Cortez has been Cortez. But the defensive ends, I mean, Brian Wright is full of potential and has had a couple interesting stretches. Like, he has, like, 5 passes batted down at the line of scrimmage, which is a lot for a defensive end. But they just need to get more production in terms of sacks and pass rush.
Yeah, Broughton has 4 of those 9 hurries, which is, that's pretty great for him. What's your take on it, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I think talent-wise, they're right where we want them to be. I think they're doing statistically, they're far and away better than they were last year on defense, and a lot of that is the defensive line. I mean, the rushing defense is 10th in the conference. Scoring defense is better at 29 points per game. I mean, the Marshall game notwithstanding, they're improving. They're better. I mean, they're not going to be. They're definitely the best position group, I think, on this entire team. But they're hamstrung by a not very good linebacker core. So if blitzes are called up, the extra backers aren't creating mismatches on the line that the defensive linemen can take advantage of. So for the most part, The pass rush is going to be 100% on the defensive line, so they're hamstrung there. And they're many times facing a team that's going to pass a lot just because they can. I don't know. I think B is fair. I think they're doing what they can with what's around them, for better or worse.
Yeah, that's fair. Let's move on to the linebacking group. I'm higher on this group than you are, I'm guessing, because I have them as a B.
Yeah, see, I think they're playing better than what they... Yeah, I think okay, B's fair. I'd probably give them about a B-, C+, just because they were pretty goddamn awful in the Navy game. But I think they're B-, C+. I think coming into the season, I probably would have had that as the weakest position group on the defense. Like, coming into the season, I probably would have graded them as, like, a C-, D+. And they're basically playing a grade better than what I thought they would be.
I would go C+. Like, because, I don't know, the Marshall game is kind of tainting this because of how they seem like the linebackers blew, like, every coverage against the tight end. But, like, outside of Minor, like, Perry Young has had his moments, but it just doesn't seem like anybody else has been that great. Like, Minor's been, like, incredible. But, like, then he got suspended for half against Navy, and that really brought down the unit as a whole. So, like, that's where I come with my grade. And, like, it doesn't seem like the linebackers have done, like, anything really, like, getting any type of pressure or any type of sacks. I don't think they have any sacks this season.
Perry Young has one. But, I mean, but this is a... It's kind of a structural thing with this defense because they are playing four safeties. Like, they're outside linebackers. They're really safeties. Tyrell Gilbert is an outside linebacker, quote-unquote. You know how I know he's a safety? He started every game last year as a safety. That's how I know. And Perry Young, love him to death, but that kid's a safety. Like, so they're trying to... I get what they're trying to do. They're trying to overwhelm offenses with just flat-out speed. But that speed and aggression has come back to bite them. Navy's a counter-punching team, and they use that aggressiveness against them to great effect. And Marshall did the same thing, right? Like, how did the tight end get open so many freaking times? Because the play calls that he scored on were all set up to prey on the aggressiveness of these linebackers. So I love their aggressiveness. I love their nature, but, like, you got to take the good with the bad. And the bad is a good, smart offense can take advantage of how aggressive they are. That just kind of is what it is. I would like to see him be a little bit more buttoned up and consistent, but I think they are kind of fully committed to this kind of aggressive attacking defense, which is such a change from anything that we've seen before that maybe I have, like, Stockholm Syndrome, and I really like this new thing because it's so different from the old thing. That might be it.
Yeah, I like the aggressive side as well. Like, don't get me wrong. But it's like I don't know, it just, like, kind of seems like they're all the guys are kind of younger, or they haven't really played linebacker. Like, really every big play they give up is because they get out of position wildly. Like, you can, like, go back through pretty much, like, every game. Like, Michigan, like, when they made their adjustments, they really preyed on the over-aggressiveness and, like, run a lot of different counters and, like, different power type of stuff. Like, and when it works, like, it works, and, like, they stop people, like, Miami and Marshall, like, at least Marshall's running game in the second half. Like, then when it goes poorly, it goes, like, very poorly. Like, it's, like, they haven't really balanced the fine line yet.
Well, yeah, and that's borne out in the numbers. I mean, like, this defense is either going to stop you for a yard or give up 50. There's no in between. It's one or the other.
Which I guess we can bring that up with the secondary now. Like, what's your overall grade for the secondary, Chris?
Oof. I would say C+ and trending downward. I had a lot more confidence in them at the beginning of the season, and it seems like, I mean, against Navy, they gave up a couple of passing touchdowns when Navy had UC right where they wanted them, and, you know, whatever, I'm not going to worry about that. The inability to get off blocks in the Navy game is where I was concerned with. It seems like Carter Jacobs has been shredded the last couple of weeks. They made some okay plays against Marshall, but overall, it just seems like they're getting taken advantage of more often than not in the last few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, like, here's my grades. Lyndon Stevens, A. Everybody else, C.
It's pretty fair.
Lyndon Stevens has been really, really good, and nobody's talking about it, so I just want to talk about it. Like, he's just, he's going to be an NFL player. He's really, really good, and his, like, he's not even targeted anymore. Like, they just, offenses just ignore his side of the field, which is great. The problem is the other, let's say, third, two-thirds of the field is wide open all the time.
That's actually going to be my point about Stevens, and you stole it. Like, they threw at, seemed like they threw at Stevens a lot earlier in the year, and they've stopped doing that. He leads the team in passes broken up with 5, and nobody else has really done a lot. Like, I would give you the same grade you did, Matt. Like, the only interception the secondary has was against Miami. That's it. The other interception you see as was by Brian Wright. Like, the kind of lack of playmakers, like, stands out. And, like, it really stands out when you give up big plays and your secondary doesn't tackle that well.
Yeah, and you got to think part of that is a problem. Part of the reason is that is because two of the safeties are playing linebacker right now. Like, in a perfect situation where you have talent and speed at linebacker, you move Tyrell Gilbert and Perry Young back, and then you improve the secondary's talent and speed in that regard. But because the linebacker core was so deprived heading into this season, I mean, they just had to improve speed at that position by bringing in safeties. And in doing so, it weakens the secondary, and we're kind of starting to see that.
I think this secondary is very good playing the run. They are not so good playing the pass. Like, Malik Clements and Carter Jacobs are very good run defenders. Navy game aside, where no one was ever in the alley. But they're not, they leave a little bit to be desired in terms of their marshaling of the coverage and against the pass. And I mean, it just kind of is what it is. And these are both first-year players. They have not played a lot of football before, so we'll see. But I think their lack of game experience, especially with Jacobs, is showing.
I think the biggest worrisome thing is they haven't actually played a real productive quarterback yet, and that's going to change very much the next 2 weeks. This is like a pretty big test for them.
Yeah, I have more... I mean, not to jump ahead of South Florida, I have a lot more confidence in UC stopping Quentin Flowers than I do against Central Florida. I just think that, I mean, Mackenzie Milton, he's a good quarterback, but... Yeah. Oh, I mean, sorry. I think Quentin Flowers is a good quarterback, but he's more of a running option quarterback, whereas Mackenzie Milton is more of your pure passer. I mean, who can also run the ball. And... It concerns the hell out of me that they have to play Central Florida right now.
Yeah, that's fair. You know what also concerns me? The special teams.
Oh yeah, let's loop right back down to special teams. I mean, how many missed field goals are we going to get this Saturday?
Fun special teams note. Cincinnati has attempted 2 26-yard field goals and missed them both. The shortest field goal Cincinnati's made this year is 36 yards, which is says a lot about the red zone offense, and that's pretty much it with the red zone offense. But yeah, like the opportunities are like not great for the kickers.
So what do you give the group?
I give the group a D.
Yeah, it's a D.
Yeah, I'll just go F, just because.
You just gotta be mean, man. Why are you being so mean?
The expectations out of your average starting college kicker is to be able to. I mean, I'm not even talking about extra points, but if we're just talking to, or I'm sorry, if we're not talking about like field goals, but just extra points, like. This place kicking unit is is a wild card whether or not they're going to hit extra points on any given day. Like, Andrew Gantz is 2 of 3 this season on extra points. I mean, granted, Josh Paisley is perfect, which is great, but he's also only hitting 50% of his field goals. And, I mean, to your point, Scott, they've only made the longest field goal this year is 36 yards. And that's not saying they can that they're not going to make anything beyond 36 yards. You don't know if they're going to make anything before 36 yards. I mean, hell, what did he miss, a 24-yarder last week? It's the expectations of a college kicker. They should be able to hit anything inside the 30, and they should be able to hit extra points without even thinking about it. And this group can't do either, and that's why they're failing in my regard.
The four misses, 26, 26, 47, 51. So it's like they don't trust the kickers to kick anything in between. But then like they, it's like, oh, go ahead and try to hit this incredibly long field goal as well, Josh Paisley. But James Smith has been like decent punting. I know his like net isn't like incredible, but like he hasn't been that terrible. And he's pinned teams back pretty well.
Oh, yeah, I have no problem with the punting is fine.
The punting's fine, and like the biggest thing with Smith is he doesn't allow returns generally, just with the style of his kicks. I mean, that's, and I'm all for that.
30 punts, 14 fair catches.
It's pretty good. That's a pretty good rate. 5 games. What do we give the coaching staff?
I'm going to go C minus. I haven't really been a fan of the strategy of Fickell, especially Michigan game for one. And this game was incredible with like some of the strategy that they chose to use, especially late in the game. Like, I don't understand like why you're down like 17 or 16 points and you kick a extra point instead of going for two, like multiple times. Like, they go for the extra point instead of going for two against Marshall. And they punted in Marshall territory with, like, 9 minutes left, which was insane.
I would say that's probably a... I think your grade is pretty spot on so far, Scott. I think game management they're doing... Yeah, I don't understand. I think so offensive defensive play calls, I think they're okay. I'd say they're probably in like a B range if we're going to grade them. But then Fickell's clock management, game management, decisions he makes with extra points versus 2-point conversions. I mean, that's just a flat out D. Like when you're sitting there on the sidelines and doing the math, or not in the sidelines, but, you know, at home watching the game and you're doing the math between, you know, kicking a field goal or kicking an extra point versus a 2-point conversion, and then the time left on the clock. I mean, you just have to, if you're a head coach, you kind of have to already have that math in your head, and you have to make the right decision, and he's not making the right decision. I think, yeah, he's probably running like a C or C+ overall from a coaching staff standpoint.
In-game decision-making, coaching, in-game stuff, like a C-. Like, for the rest of it, I'd probably give him a B. And that's the thing we don't think about as fans all that often, is that the actual in-game stuff is such a small part of what the head coach job is. Right? Like, even for, like, a coordinator, like, calling the plays is... It's a small part of what you do. Like, some people have a great feel for it, some people don't. But, like, the bigger part of the job is, you know, personnel management, finding the right people, game planning. Like, that's the stuff that takes up more of their time than actually thinking through game theory, but we don't know that because we just watch the games. So we focus, we're hypercritical on the stuff they do in those 3 hours and kind of ignore the rest of it. And that's not to say that what they do on the field doesn't matter. And like I said, in game, they're probably a D right now. They need to get better. But, you know, I'm still happy that Luke Fickell is our coach. That's what I'll say.
Yeah, and I think some of that in-game management will come around. he's still a relatively young head coach. He only coached a single season at Ohio State and then these, what, five games? So he's still a pretty green head coach. I think that stuff kind of comes around. I'm impressed with the fact that, I mean, obviously the energy is there. I think the coaching throughout the game, no matter the score or the time or the quarter, is there. The ability to make adjustments and change schemes, I've been impressed with that. It's just some of the smaller, like, in-game clock timeout, you know, extra point versus two-point conversion management, which I think will come around, hopefully. Or it might just be something that just lingers with the program. I mean, no coach is perfect outside of Nick Saban. So maybe that's just something we'll just have to live with. But overall, I think it's about a C, and I think Fickell's right for the program.
Yeah, like last two games aside, like it's like going with Freeman as your defensive coordinator. Like a lot of people just said, like, oh, that's a big recruiting move. But the defense has been playing well. At least they've been playing like better than they have. Like I guess Denbrock would be still kind of a question mark with like how, like if you just look at what their offense has done, like just by the percentages of how they rank nationally, it's still a question mark. Like, I think he's got the program facing the right direction, which is really the overall important part of a first-year coach.
Yeah, and I think Scott, to Denbrock's point, I mean, I know you're kind of not as high on the play calling. I'm more high on the play calling than you are. I would be very curious to see what those plays look like with Ross Trail running them more than Hayden Moore. If let's say in 4 weeks' time Ross Trail has been at the helm for a while and he's the guy, and we're still seeing the same kinds of offensive woes that we've been facing for the last few weeks, then I would probably put more shade towards Denbrock than the actual quarterback position. But for now, I think Denbrock's calling the right plays. I'd like to see what happens when you actually have a competent quarterback at running the damn offense. But we'll see. I think the jury's still out on Denbrock. I agree that Freeman seems like the right hire from a lot of different perspectives. But I'm a little higher on Denbrock than you are, and I totally get where you're coming from.
So what are the odds that this ends up being a year zero for the Bearcats?
What's your definition of year zero?
A year zero is basically where a coach comes in and they basically rip it down to the studs and start over. That usually entails losing a lot of games, not being very competitive, getting your ass kicked frequently, and playing a lot of young people. They're checking a lot of those boxes early.
So what's a year one?
A year one is if none of this bad stuff happens and you just come in and win. Like, a year one is Scott Frost last year. That's year one. The classic year zero is Willie Taggart for, like, years one through three at South Florida.
Okay, yeah, we're in a year zero. I thought we were going to be in a year one, it's a zero.
I think it kind of depends on, like, where you end up, like, with the SMU and Tulane games. Just because, like, those teams look actually kind of decent. At least SMU looks pretty decent. And Tulane is a road game, and UC hasn't won a conference road game since, like, 1935, it seems. That's not true, but it seems that way. Like, so, like, I think if you end up, like, 2-6 or, like, 2-7, then I think, like, you just rip it down and you play the new guys the last three games of the year and just try to see where you are. Maybe they do that anyway if they end up 2-4 or 2-5. Like, you just see what you have in the future. Like, see who sticks.
I mean, they're kind of doing that right now. I mean, obviously the running back position comes to mind. But even the defense, as well as it's playing a lot of first-year players. Like a lot. And they're going out there and playing well. And I mean, like, that's obviously a move for the future. Like, so they are projected to lose the next four games and sit at 2-7 going into the final three of the year. Luckily, those are all against three pretty bad teams. So yeah, like I'm fairly confident that this is year zero, and we just throw it away and move on to the next one.
Well, I mean, I was writing this season off. I mean, I was saying before the season, I wasn't really excited about the season. I mean, this was going to be a rough one. I mean, they were going to scratch and claw to win five or six games. I mean, I think ever since Fickell was hired, he was preparing this program for 2018 and beyond. Like, wasn't even worrying about 2017 in my mind. So in that sense, yeah, it's a year zero, and if they get to a bowl game and get a few more practices in and build for 2018, great. I mean, this whole season was a complete wash. I mean, I did not even care if they however many games they won this season. It was more about how they played and who was playing and how those individual players performed. Like, Perry Young is going to be a hoss for the next few years. You know, Jared Doakes is going to be awesome at running back. Michael Warren is going to be great. And that's what we're going to look forward to as carrying this team from 2018 and beyond. I think that was kind of the point of this season, at least in my mind.
Yeah, that's fair. So with our September wrap-up completed, we want to actually talk about the game at hand. And I'm bad at math. How many hours?
Not particularly. What is it, 48 hours, something like that from now? No, it's 24. Like 30. It's a Friday.
It's like 30-something.
Okay, right. What's the difference?
Let's talk about this. I think they just had the best win of any AAC team to date. I think what they did to Memphis is better than anything else that's happened. Thoughts?
I watched their last two games, and they've been really incredibly impressive. Like, offensively, defensively, like, it's kind of insane the way they just stomped Memphis. I, like, just ripped their life force from them. And, like, Maryland, like, ended up going to Minnesota and winning. So, like, that, like, blowout victory, like, even, like, shines a little better for them. Like, Mackenzie Milton is really good. Like, he's completing near 65% of his passes for 791 yards in only three games with eight touchdowns and only two picks. And they move the ball downfield. Like, this is going to be a real challenge for the secondary. Because you're going to get tested, and you're going to get tested deep. Because they like to throw the ball deep, and the receivers are fast and can match.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing that concerns me about Central Florida is that they're the best all-around team in the conference. South Florida's ranked ahead of them, but they've got issues at quarterback. They're inconsistent in a lot of different areas. Scott Frost has Central Florida rolling. I mean, they're one of the best teams offensively and defensively in the conference in a number of different areas. And, hell, I mean, forget South Florida. I mean, this is the hardest conference game on Cincinnati's schedule right now. It's going to be ugly. Like, what's the line right now? Like, 17 points? Something like that? That's kind of generous to UC. I don't know if UC can keep this within 20 or 30.
Yeah,
and it's gonna be rough.
It's gonna be rough, but I'm looking forward to watching Mackenzie Milton, because, like, this guy, he's got such a weird background. Like, he's from Hawaii. And he chose to go to school in Orlando. He is 6,000 miles from home. Like his entire story, like, he was committed to Hawaii. He was going to be, you know, the next Timmy Chang, whatever you want to call it. Like, the next island-born quarterback who actually went to UH rather than transferring or going to a school on the mainland, like most of the best of the last 5 years have done. Marcus Mariota, Tua down at Alabama. Like, Hawaii's had some good quarterbacks, but they usually leave the island. And Milton was committed to stay with the Warriors. And then he decided to decommit and follow Scott Frost to Orlando. And it's been a great decision. Like, he's just a phenomenal player to watch. Like, he's not that big. He's not that fast. But, you know, for a 5'10", 190-pound dude to dominate the way he does, it's just outstanding to watch. And, like, he doesn't play like anybody else I can recall. Like, he's got a little bit of Jeremiah Mazzulla in him in terms of his feel for the game and this offense. But he's way faster than Mazzulla was, and not as big and not as physical, and a better passer. Like, it's just, he's such a unique player that, you know, the last 2 years have been awesome, and the next 2 years are going to be pretty interesting to watch with him as well.
Yeah, to go along with his passing, he's ran for 186 yards, like, on running plays, which is second on their team. Like, he's, like, an incredible, like, dual threat. And, like, their offense has been, like, just insane. Like, the fewest point amount of points they scored is 38. They've hung 40 on Memphis and 61 on FIU. And it's been like their passing game ranks incredibly highly, like, in just like their success rate. And so is their passing defense, to that fact. Like, this is just really a scary team. Like, as you guys mentioned, USF has, like, all the offensive hype because Quentin Flowers, like, earned it the last couple of years. But, like, really, it's been, like, Mackenzie Milton has, like, been the headliner in the league.
Yeah, and no one's talking about him. Quentin Flowers takes all the headlines. But this offensively, they pass all over you. They've got a solid running game. Defensively, they're aggressive, and they stop you at the line of scrimmage. I mean, it's, no matter what position group you try to win at, Central Florida has an answer. And that's the biggest concern I have. I mean, like, you harken back to kind of like the Michigan game when we were kind of talking about, like, is there a position group where UC can hang their hats on and say, hey, yeah, that's going to beat Michigan's defensive group on the other side of the line of scrimmage. And I don't know if we could really have come up with one. That's the same kind of concern I have going into this game. I mean, potentially the defensive line, but, I mean, McKenzie doesn't really get sacked that often. They've still got a solid running game. I don't know if there's any offensive position group that could flat out beat Central Florida's opposite group. It's a concern that I have. Go on.
I would say defensive line, but Mackenzie Milton doesn't get sacked, and I mean
that's
literally.
The problem.
He has not been sacked, and for a quarterback of his stature who runs around a lot, generally, like, mobile quarterbacks are fun, but they give up a lot of sacks because they think they can always get out of a play. Lamar Jackson is a perfect example of that. And Lamar also plays behind an interesting offensive line, I guess would be the polite way to say that. I mean, they're more like stick figures. Anyways, but Milton has not been sacked, and he does all sorts of ill-advised things, like doubling out of the pocket all the time and get away with it. Like, he's just incredible.
Yeah, but small sample with them, only 3 games. But according to the numbers, they have the most explosive offense in the country. Maybe not the most expensive, but the most explosive.
The most expensive is Alabama. Everybody knows that.
You don't know how much. No, I'll just stop there and not implicate teams in any goal action.
I'm sure they'll implicate themselves soon enough.
True. Can we all just enjoy our last 9 games with Scott Frost?
Yeah, that was going to be my next point, is, like, they have a gigantic coaching advantage, I think, because I think he's by far the best coach in the league, even with, like, a guy like Charlie Strong, who, like, has done really impressive things in the past. He's going to go places. Like, what he's done at UCF in 2 years is, like, just incredible. Like, after how bad they were, like, the last time they came to Nippert.
Well, that's the other thing. Nobody talked. Like, they were 0-12 before he got here, and he took that exact same roster and went 6-6.
They were by far the worst team UC played that year, and UC played a FCS team. It's like that crazy of a turnaround.
Yeah, I mean, he is the next great bright shining star in the long list of bright shining stars in this conference. I think he's going to take that Nebraska job. I really hope he doesn't, because Nebraska is never going to be Nebraska again. And I think it would be a waste of his talents, but that's probably what's going to happen.
But they would be fun just because he went there, because he's really, done a hell of a job at UCF.
If I'm him, I stick around for another year, and then when Ed O. Orgeron gets fired at LSU, then I go there. Because LSU with this offense, with those athletes, yeah.
Oh, you mean Matt Canada's not doing it for you?
No, I think LSU's fundamental problem is they don't have a quarterback. No offense to Danny Etling, but if you're relying on Danny Etling to be your savior, that's a problem.
Any chance Scott Frost goes to Illinois?
Hell no.
he has a sense of logic behind him? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think he's a smart guy. he could have stayed at Oregon and made $750,000 a year forever, right? Like, he could have been there forever making that kind of money in a job where you win big constantly and you have all the resources you could ever want. And he was very smart in taking a job with the kind of athletes already in place that would work for the system that he wanted to run. I mean, I just think he's a very, very good coach.
Yeah, I mean to your guys' point earlier, he looked at an 0-12 Central Florida team and said, yeah, I can win there. And, I mean, the other thing is Central Florida went 0-12, but, like, what, 2 or 3 years after they went to the Fiesta Bowl? I mean, that's not a bad program that he took over, and he had the foresight and the attitude to turn them around. I mean, he knows what Central Florida is. I mean, they're the heart of SEC country with tons of talent at his doorstep. He knew what he was getting himself into, and he knew he could win there, and he was smart enough to take that job, despite, you know, Central Florida looking like a train wreck in the short term.
Yeah, all right. The turnaround between him and O'Leary is...
it's stark.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, just a bit.
All right, so do we want to stop blowing Scott Frost and read the last week?
Yes, we can do that. Quickly, USF destroyed East Carolina. I was not watching this game, but people were like, oh, East Carolina is kind of feisty. Then they like lost by 30 and gave up 61 points. Did either of you watch that game?
Bits. And ECU is not hopeless, but they're not anywhere near good.
Yeah, ECU is like what SMU was last year. Like, they can score, but the problem is that they let the team score a lot more than they do, which is not going to win you a lot of games.
Doesn't that sound like a very good strategy? Temple, 20-13 losers against Houston. Kind of interesting that game was close. Temple did score a lot of their points late.
Temple punted on fourth and goal. Can we please talk about that? Did you guys watch that play?
I did not. Tell us about it, Chris.
I mean, classic Temple quarterback. It's, what, first and 15. He runs back 20 yards and heaves it to, I don't even know where it was, but inside the boundaries, gets called for intentional grounding, and Temple ends up having to punt on fourth and goal from, I think, their 45-yard line. So that was a highlight of that game.
I mean, that was bad. It wasn't like third and 93 bad, but it was pretty bad.
God, I love college football. I just love it so much.
I like it because it's stupid. That's what I like about it.
That's true. Yeah, you don't get that kind of stupidity in the NFL.
It's the dumbest of all footballs, and also yes, the best.
Yes, it is. Temple looked feisty in that game. I think I think Houston just had a bad game more so than Temple looked outright better than what they have in the last few weeks.
Temple's quarterback did throw 3 interceptions yet again. He seems to be their problem.
He's a problem. I don't think he's their problem.
Yes, Temple is not good. Navy 31, Tulsa 21.
Good for Navy.
Yeah. Who could have guessed that Navy is Navy again? Shocking.
Yeah. SMU 49, Connecticut 28. This game was actually tied to beginning of the fourth quarter. Which maybe UConn isn't completely terrible, but then like they still lost by a lot of points. They lost by 21 points. They give up 21 points in, looks like, 7 minutes, which is also not great.
This team is like the anti-UConn, where they are still very much a one-dimensional team, but the dimension is flipped. They are now pretty good on offense and just dreadful on defense. Reversing 15 years of their entire program being defense and special teams, and maybe kind of will score some points.
Yeah, Brian Sheriff's thrown for 1,165 yards, 8 touchdowns, 2 picks. He threw for 400 yards. When's the last time a UConn quarterback threw for 400 yards?
Dan Orlovsky?
Oh, wow.
It's my educated guess.
That was a lot of years ago.
A very long time ago. Now I feel bad for UConn, kind of. And we already touched on UCF destroying Memphis. This week, Memphis plays UConn. They're a 14.5 point road favorite. I believe that game is today, isn't it?
Yes.
Does Memphis just stomp all over UConn's heart and soul? And more importantly, the over-under is 71.5. Does Memphis and UConn get over that hurdle?
I think they do, because both declined to play defense. As a matter of principle.
Yeah, I'd agree. And I think Memphis doesn't have an issue in this game. I think they win pretty comfortably.
I'm kind of surprised with just how bad Memphis's defense is. Like, did their entire secondary get suspended before the season started?
Oh, you mean hiring a defensive coordinator as your head coach and you're surprised they're giving up a lot of yards on and points? Is that what you're referring to, Scott?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a bit of an issue.
Not that we know anything about that.
Oh, no, we have no idea what that feels like.
Yeah, I wonder what that feeling is. Interesting game, not really interesting at all, is Temple, a 2-point favorite on the road at East Carolina. I think East Carolina is going to pull this one out and avoid the over.
What's the over-under?
It's a low 60.
Huh. I'll go with that one. I think East Carolina wins and keeps it under. I think I mean, I've seen crazier things.
Yeah, and Temple continues to not field a quarterback, so that's kind of an issue.
I think the real question is, when's the last time a Temple over-under has been 60 points? It seems like it would be when they were really terrible.
Yeah, it's probably been a minute.
Tulane hosts Tulsa, they're a 4.5-point favorite. Does the Willie Fritz train keep rolling on with Tulsa just being completely terrible this year for whatever reason?
Yeah, I think Tulane's gonna get that done. Like, I watched them a little bit in the game against Army. That offense is weird, man. But it's kind of explosive. Which doesn't make sense, but like they just seem to have a knack for generating big plays at the right moments, and it's a good skill to have against Tulsa.
If Tulane wins, they would be 3-2, which just seems kind of insane. Be 3-2, then going to play FIU. They would have a pretty almost a legit chance for a bowl game.
I think if they win this game, they are bowling.
Yeah, we might be living in a dimension where Tulane goes to a bowl game and Cincinnati doesn't.
That would be a bad dimension.
It would be.
That's the darkest timeline.
That is the darkest timeline. Thank you for that community reference.
SMU, Houston. Houston's a 6.5-point favorite. I'm kind of leaning SMU. I don't know if they'll win outright. I don't think they will, but I think this will be a close game. Something's not right with Houston. I don't really know what it is.
Oh, Tom Herman's not there. Injured.
Yeah, is he gonna be out this Saturday?
I think he's gonna play, but I don't think he's gonna be 100%. That's the last I saw from one of the Houston bloggers on Twitter.
Right. Yeah. I would probably if I had money on the game, I'd probably say Houston. But yeah, Scott. I mean, I kind of agree. I don't know if SMU can't win that game.
Because we saw what SMU did to Houston last season.
Which is why I don't think it's going to happen this year. I think they're going to be up for revenge and focused in a way that Houston team just wasn't. I mean, remember, like, the full Cincinnati team of last year hung with Houston for three quarters.
Fair point. Not conference game of the week, the only one. Part of the Commander-in-Chief Trophy Series. Navy plays Air Force. Navy's a 7.5-point favorite. I kind of think they're just going to stomp on Air Force. Thoughts, opinions?
No, I think that's right.
That's probably pretty accurate. I mean, considering Air Force runs pretty much the same offense as Tulane, and Navy was close with Tulane, but just by means of both of them being basically running offenses. And Air Force seems worse than Tulane this year. So yeah, I think Navy doesn't have an issue with Air Force this year.
They don't either. Like, one quick note, East Carolina's given up 99 points in conference, which is more than Navy has scored in three games. That's kind of insane.
Yeah, these things happen when you decline to field a defense.
You guys want to talk about a little basketball before we close this week?
I probably got to bounce, but you guys, by all means, talk some hoops. It's a pretty exciting week of hoops.
Now, we'll just talk about this real quick. Since they announced the Ohio State series, what's your level of excitement for the OSU series?
Pretty high. I'm very much looking forward to them exacting some revenge for that bullshit 2006 scheduling thing that Ohio State did a year after UC death penalized themselves. And Connor Barwin was tasked with guarding Greg Oden. So looking forward to some revenge game in that sense.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to do everything I can to be at that game.
I was hoping you'd be like a better opponent. Just like coming into fifth third to reopen the arena, but it seems like people are really excited for Ohio State, so I'll join the fray and be excited as well.
Like Ohio State. Yeah, no, I totally get you, Scott. It's like we kind of wish it was going to be more a better like RPI opponent because we don't really know if how quickly Ohio State's going to be rebuilt. Like, are they going to be a solid Big Ten team, like a ranked team, when they come to fifth third next year, or are they going to be like the last couple of years of the Thad Mata era, where they're kind of middling in the middle?
No, I think the Thad Mata experience is going to linger for quite a while for that program.
Right. So, like, they're like right now, they're a big name in just, like, name alone. But, like, it really just remains to be seen if they're going to be, like, a good quality home opponent for UC's tourney strength schedule.
We do know they'll be well-coached. I like Chris Holtman. I wonder if he's the reason that this series got pushed through. So Ohio State has never played at Cincinnati, like at Cincinnati's home arena, ever. Teams have only played neutral site basketball games. So I guess like when Ohio State was good, it mattered more. But I don't like, ever think about Ohio State's basketball team. So like I don't know. That series.
No one does. That's why it's one of the 10 best jobs in the country. Because you have no expectations and nobody cares. What unlimited resources.
the last time people cared about Ohio State basketball was because their walk-on had a blog. And that's with them having the number two pick in the draft a couple years ago.
Shout out to Titus.
You guys have anything else you want to get to before we wrap it up this week? Or have we talked long enough?
Bye, y'all. I recommend 1.5 speed for this one.